Welcome to the Cutter's Notch podcast, hosted by author Michael DeCamp and his family. Recorded in the Cutter's Notch studios, this podcast explores anything related to creativity. You'll find interviews with creative people, such as authors, artists, and performers, as well as friendly banter about any number of topics. Turn up the volume, listen, and catch up on what's happening in Cutter's Notch.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Cutter's Notch podcast. I'm your host, Mike DeCamp.
And I'm Nancy DeCamp.
Yeah, there she is. Hi, Nancy.
Hello, Michael.
And with us today, we have another DeCamp with us.
Yes.
And you've heard of him before if you've listened to the podcast. And his name is also Michael DeCamp. Hello, Michael.
Hello.
This is kind of surreal, right?
You know, it's interesting. What we're going to talk about today, folks, is we're going to talk about building an audiobook. And Michael and I just collaborated on creating an audiobook. And as we're recording this, it's been submitted. It's been approved. It's in the publishing stage. And probably by the time you hear this, it will be out there on the market.
Yay.
So pull out your smartphones, your Kindles, or wherever you listen to audiobooks and download it. For crying out loud, we put a lot of time and work into this, and we need you to buy it. So we'll tell you about that here as we go. But we're going to start off with our, as we always do, with our creative indulgences. Nancy,
yes,
what's your creative indulgence?
I've had a lot of creative indulgences lately. So I love music, and I love summertime and outdoor concerts. So we've had the opportunity in the last month, locally at a local park venue. We saw Andy Grammer and Fits in the Tantrums, I've seen Andy Grammer before, hadn't seen Fits in the Tantrums. I was aware of them and knew their music, but they were great live. And then we took a little road trip and went to Pittsburgh and saw Brandi Carlile and Pink. And if you have never seen Pink perform, you don't have to like her music. You just need to go see. I mean, she's incredible. So that's been my creative indulgence, is to lean into my summer music jams.
So here I am, Michael. I'm with Nancy at the Pittsburgh Pirates baseball stadium. I guess it's PNC Park.
PNC Park.
Me and about 50,000 other women. So big women attended. There were a lot of guys there, but it was a
majority
large,
was women.
Large percentage were women, and I enjoyed the concert. And especially when Pink got to the end and she started flipping around all over the whole stadium, flying through the air with the greatest of ease.
Cool.
Yeah.
But
was she on like a wire?
Yeah.
Flying setup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like she went. The stage fun. Was in the outfield, and she kicked off at one point on the last song and flew up all the way behind home plate to the top stands where people sat. Still singing, flipping around, singing, waving at people. And then they swung around one end of the stadium and swung around back and then came back in the middle. There were a couple of like pylons in the middle of the people who were sitting on the ground that she stopped and sang. And then she flew off again. And
it was pretty crazy.
Holy smokes.
Yeah, pretty crazy. And she's in her 40s. It's not like, you know, she's a kid. So, but she was able to keep singing the whole time. But one of the intriguing things for me was, as a guy, you know, you don't think about, the struggles of going to the restroom in a place like that. But women have a problem because
there's not
enough facilities, yeah. Especially when probably 75% of the attendees were women.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime, you know, the first time I went to the restroom, no women. Second time I went to the restroom, there was one woman comes kind of tiptoeing in and she's like, I'm sorry, but I got to go. You know, it's like nobody cares. Okay. And then the next time I went, there's actually a line inside the men's room on one end by the stalls. And then by the time I finished, there was another line lined up behind the stalls of just women, not stalls, behind the urinals, just women waiting to go to the restroom, which was I just smile. I was like, well, you got to do what you got to do. You know, they don't build these for things sure. for you. So, you know, you got to do it. So anyway, that was fun. I enjoyed the concert. Nancy walked my tail off. We walked like 10 miles the day of the concert. Literally,
wow.
I'm not even exaggerating.
Pittsburgh's a cool town. They got a lot of cultural areas and foodie places. And
yep.
So.
All right. So I'm giving you a little bit more time on your creative indulgences, folks. We didn't give Michael any heads up on that. So, Nancy's going first. I'm going second. So, mine is, I finished, you know, last time I was on here, I was talking about, Breakfast of Champions by Vonnegut, and I did finish that. But I read another book in between the finishing of that book and this podcast. And it's one of my favorite authors. Favorite characters. It's a Walt Longmire. Try that again. A Walt Longmire novel called An Obvious Fact. It's number 12 in the series, written by Craig Johnson. I love the Walt Longmire books. I loved the Longmire TV series, and it's a great little story. Basically, he and Henry, his buddy Henry Standing Bear, get pulled over to the area around Devil's Tower, right around the bike week time, you know, when everybody's going to Sturgis to investigate a hit and run accident, and mayhem ensues. It's a good thing. The other thing that I have been really loving, Michael, are you a Star Trek fan?
A little bit. The newer movies with like Chris Pine have kind of won me over a little more. The older stuff,
yeah,
I'm not as into.
Well, I was.
I respect it.
I'm a little.
Yeah. Really respect it.
Yeah.
I'm a
it's
little.
Not my taste.
I'm a little older than you. You know, just a few years. So
a little bit.
So I really
just
got
a little bit.
Just you know, let's not exaggerate this.
Four or 5 years.
times something else. So back in the day, I was a original Star Trek fan. With Kirk and Spock and the whole gang, William Shatner, Leonard Nimoy. Then in the 80s, Nancy and I got to watching The Next Generation, and we liked that. We liked the movies, the motion pictures, and then of course the Chris Pine movies were great. Lately, I've been watching on Paramount. I've been watching some of the new Star Trek stuff, so Star Trek Discovery, Picard. But the one that I've been loving lately is season 2 of Strange New Worlds, which is kind of a prequel to the original Star Trek. It's a younger Spock, a younger Uhura. Christopher Pike is the captain, and Kirk, James Tiberius Kirk, is the he's actually not on the ship. He's on a different ship, and he's like a going to be like a first officer or something. So he's like, he hasn't quite moved into that role yet. I've been really loving that. It's interesting. This year they had three very intriguing episodes this year. One was a crossover episode with Below Decks, which is an animated Star Trek. And they did a crossover episode where a character from Below Decks goes through a portal in the comic version and ends up in a live action Strange New Worlds setting. So he goes through a time portal and ends up in live action.
Okay.
And then ends up back. So that was kind of an intriguing crossover. And then there was an episode that got really dark about the wars with the,
you're giving them all away.
Well, it was a really dark one, but it was with the wars with the Klingons, and then the last one was actually a Star Trek musical. It was crazy. Anyway, that's my indulgences. Michael, what about you? You got anything?
Well, my creative indulgences are video games, and I also love outdoor concerts. So a couple of weeks ago, I went to the 10th anniversary of the Game Awards concert with the LA Philharmonica at the Hollywood Bowl.
Nice.
So they were playing video games in general are chasing after that blockbuster summer movie style now.
Sure.
And so their scores are now up there with some blockbuster movies.
Too fun.
So they play some pretty epic stuff from Final Fantasy and God of War. A bunch of stuff that I know and love. That was really cool to see all that played live and just hear how far video games have come as a medium.
Yeah.
And now people respect them and money's put into them and quality's put into them. as well as at the end of the concert, they had a fireworks show. And the fireworks come right out of the top of the bowl. So it's like the closest, most explosive fireworks show I think I've ever seen. And this was like in June.
Yeah.
Right before 4th of July. So 4th of July rolled around. I didn't even care.
Yeah, you got your fix.
The best fireworks show. And 4th of July, you're always sitting on some lawn and the fireworks show's 8 miles away, you know. And at the bowl, it's right there.
Yeah.
Coming out of, I can't believe how close it is. So yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, let's transition into the topic of this episode.
Yes, so, how Mike was a creeper and yeah, it turned into something nice.
Yeah, thanks, Nancy. Thanks, Nancy. Yeah, well, yes, I sort of was. You know, well, you know, Michael,
but our guest. But who has not?
Michael, our guest, is he's an actor and a stuntman, and he has the same name I have.
Yes. Who out there has not Googled their own name?
I think, you know, actually, when I tell people this story, there's a lot of people who haven't Googled their own.
Really?
Name. It's like they never thought about it. Had you ever done that, Michael?
Yeah, for sure.
Everybody does that.
Did I come up?
No. No, but we talked about a couple of people, like the chef, Michael DeCamp, and he came up.
Yeah.
I think there might have been one more.
Well, there's a painter, and then there was a guy who was a deep sea diver, but he's passed on. But
okay.
Yeah. So it was,
if you go on to like Facebook or something or Twitter, there's like 100,000 Michael DeCamps. So that's a little bit harder to do because
I'm not going to
filter through those.
Right.
Some other random Michael DeCamp actually, well, that's the name he used, stole my cousin's Facebook account and changed it to, she's a woman and not named Michael, but he stole her account, changed his picture to a picture to a man and put my name on it. So it was
all right.
Yeah, you gotta love these Facebook idiots. So
yeah, I guess so.
Anyway,
how do you really feel about that?
The truth is, I'm not gonna tell you exactly how I feel about it. I'd have to edit that. To repeat the history, yes. I Googled my own name and up popped Michael DeCamp, our guest, and he was much younger then, and much younger than me still is, and I was like, well, that's interesting. So I started every once in a while, I'd Google my name and here he was, he's still there. And eventually I started following him on Instagram and probably about 2 years ago now or so, he posted a post with a microphone in front of his face and had hashtag voice actor. And so
you're like,
I got this bright idea. Hey, I'll just comment. I never thought it'd go anywhere. You know, I just put a comment on there. I said, hey, you know, here's an interesting idea. How about you narrate my books and then they'd be written by Michael DeCamp and narrated by Michael DeCamp. And a couple of days, what happened when you saw that? Do you remember that? Did you remember what your reaction?
Yeah, vaguely. It was, there was definite intrigue there. Cause it's not every day you have someone with your name reach out to you and want to collaborate with you.
Yeah. Well, you probably had to think, is this a real guy? You know, is this a real thing?
Yeah. I had to think, is this a real guy? And then also, is this guy worth my time?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because I am a professional actor. And so I got to be careful about
who I agree to.
Yeah. You gotta be strategic about who I agree to work with.
Right.
You know, so I can't just like say yes to anybody in any random whatever. But every step of the way, everything I asked from you, you agreed to, and you're very professional with me. As well as just our lineages tracing backwards just kept getting more and more interesting because we're both rooted in Indiana.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's just too, you're in Indianapolis now, but like my family's from like West Lafayette.
Yeah. Right. Hang on 1 second.
Oh, we got to turn that up.
I'm turning it up. Okay, there you go.
She's playing with the soundboard. So yeah, you know, that was very interesting. With your lineage being so close to mine, my dad was from Lima, Ohio. So I am sure if we traced it, we would find the connection.
Some type of connection.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. So next thing that happened, actually, we started talking and I don't know how I convinced you, but somehow or another, you gave me your cell phone number. And so we started texting.
See, I say again, his daughters and I are like, you're being a creeper. You're being a creeper.
See what I have to deal with.
Yeah.
And then I went out there for work.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, I'm coming out. And Michael agreed to come down and meet with me. So he met me in Anaheim. We had lunch. And you told me the story of your first book narration. Can you share some of that?
Did you try to go, was that kind of a side thing? Let me see. Or yeah. Were you really interested in doing some recording?
It was earlier in my career where I was looking for other avenues and things to try. Mm-hmm. And so I found this audiobook thing and I managed to book one of them. And so I record the book. I'm still kind of green, so I don't know how everything works. I record the book. I send it to the author. The author says, it's fine. Great. Send it off. And the company we're working with is like, not good enough. It's got all these problems with it. And it's like, ah, great. And then I look at the problems and it's very educational. Yeah. Taught me what to do.
Sure.
But then I realize, holy crap, I got to re-record this entire thing.
No, the whole thing?
Yeah. And upgrade my methods. So I did that. And it's like, okay, that's doubling the time of this book. So I'm a master of doing this thing by the time I'm done with it. And then I submit it again. And the author more or less ghosted me.
No.
I was like, all right, I'm done. The second pass is done. It should be perfect now. Never gets back to me. And I'm like, so it's very frustrating to put a lot of time into a project and then have it just not come to fruition.
Sure.
And that is a lot of projects for any actor. They're going to do stuff and it's never going to come out. And you're like, well, why did I waste time with it? But we kind of have to some degree.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But this is one of those projects that I knew I was going to make no money anyway. So I was really doing it for the experience more than anything. And then to not have it even come out, I was like, great. I think I'm good. I don't need to do this again.
not where I want to focus my time in developing my career.
Yeah. So yeah. I had actually sent Michael a copy of my book.
Yeah.
And when we got together and we got to talking and he shared that story with me and I really felt the pain there. I mean, I understood where you were coming from. I'm like, you know who I am, you know where I'm at, you know, I'm easy to find, but I understand,
you know
where I live.
I know roughly where you live.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you, I'll be happy to tell you, but not on the not on the podcast. So
I'll get a plane out there and I'll start tracking the footsteps.
I live in the Cutter's Notch studio. Yeah. I was like, well, listen, I understand, you know, if you're hesitant, if you're not sure you want to do it, if you change your mind, you know, let me know. At that point, I was like, well, it'd be nice if we do it. I'm still thinking I'd like to do an audiobook. I'm not sure how I was going to do it. And just so you know, folks, when you are an author and you're with a big name publishing house, they cover all that. They arrange for the narration. They pay for the narration. They pay for the marketing. They do all the graphics and everything that goes with it. And it's all covered. But when you're with a small press or you're an independent author, that's all on you. And so I'm like, well,
you're learning and figuring out.
So I'm kind of like Michael was in his first experience. I'm in my first experience trying to do an audiobook. And so I'm like, I'm not really sure how to make this happen.
And let me pause you there for a second.
Okay.
Why did you decide to do an audiobook of your book?
Seems like a lot of people listen to audiobooks and it just, there are some people that's the only way they read. We could get into a debate on whether audiobooks are really reading or not, but you know, that's a whole nother thing. But I wanted to get my story that I had created out there and
another way another income stream, another way to market.
Yeah. Another market. Yeah. It's another market I hadn't tapped into. And so basically where I left it with Michael is, hey, you know, if you change your mind, if you decide you want to do it, let me know. And what happened next, Michael?
Well, you sent me a copy of your book and I took some time with it, just to read it and make sure it was something I wanted to do and something I was okay with. And, I got about halfway through it and I was like, this seems all right. It's fun to read. It's nothing too questionable against my own morals or whatever. And so I figured, what the heck, let's just do it.
Yeah. So the next day I get a message from Michael. He says, hey, you know, if you're still interested in me recording your audiobook, I'm game. And so I said, well, let's talk. So I think we probably Zoomed. I think we did a Zoom call, talked about the parameters, kind of agreed on some pricing.
Do you think, Michael, do you think that it helped to meet Mike and interact with him a bit before? I mean, obviously you read the book and you're like, okay, this story's okay with it. I'm okay with this. But do you think kind of establishing that relationship helped as well?
Absolutely. I rarely get that luxury doing projects. It's a lot of shooting in the dark, and then you get a phone call, and if the deal's good, you go forward. But you don't usually get to know people as much as I'd like, which for me is very helpful in telling me if I want to do a project, if I feel safe doing a project, especially on a smaller project. So getting to know Michael over a little bit of time, I could kind of determine what kind of person he was, what our interactions were going to be like, and all of that seemed okay to me.
Okay.
So yeah, that was helpful in me deciding to take on the project.
Good, good.
Now you have your own equipment or space at home. In doing audiobooks, is there a knack to it? Is there, you know, do you practice your diction? Do you?
You have to warm up your throat.
Yeah, I guess there's a knack to it. I have a lifetime worth of acting training.
Sure.
And almost as much time worth of voiceover training. And I've always been known to be a good out loud reader. Even in, go back to junior high, all my friends were like, we just loved when you read in class. Like, all right, cool. Glad you liked it. Part of my training for something like audiobooks is to read out loud.
Yeah.
So like I'll take the book and before I start recording, I'll read out loud from the book for 5 or 10 minutes just to get my articulators warmed up, to get my brain in line with my mouth. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yeah,
I combine.
It does.
General reading with, I also, because I pride myself on my acting ability, I combine the general reading of the narrator with trying to play the characters within the book like actual people.
Yeah.
So hopefully it's a little more immersive rather than just like the narrator now narrating the quotations of each character. It's like, no, you could imagine the narrator side by side with the movie scenes going on. So.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting. It kind of goes along with what I've kind of learned about audiobooks. So, you know, I had people say, well, why don't you record your own audiobook? I mean, I've got the soundboard, I've got the speakers. I lack a really good soundproof space, but technically I think I could probably record adequate quality to do it. But what I don't have is that acting background. I don't have the voiceover practice.
I don't
have the professional skills that Michael has. And so
timing.
And what I learned along the way as I researched it is that with fiction, you need to have someone who has some acting ability so that they can play the characters.
Bingo.
With nonfiction, like with my Loving Out Loud book, people like to hear the author read nonfiction books. But
interesting.
But they want an actor for the fiction. And I'm like, well, that makes perfect sense. So
so that's when you decided, you know, I'm not going to try to do it myself. Let me consider other avenues.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. So that's when I started thinking about, okay, who could I get to do it? And then it was just a fluke that I found that post on Instagram, because I don't see all your posts on Instagram. I just ran across that one. I'm like, well, this is
he
really
might
cool.
be a creeper, but he doesn't that kind of creeper.
I don't follow everything.
We're all a little bit of a creeper nowadays.
I know. Somebody at work that, okay, side note, random side note. We're doing some interviewing and they were having some interviews and this person came. And of course you do research. You might go on LinkedIn. You might go on social media to see if you have questions. But one of the people came to the interview and had researched the two people from my company everywhere and knew about everything about them. And I'm like, okay, you might do that, but you don't come to the interview and say, yes, I know you've worked this many jobs at this place and that place. And it was like, we were talking about this week. It was like, oh, that's maybe it was a little
over the top.
A little over the top.
Yeah, interesting.
So sorry about that sidebar.
Well, you're allowed. You're the co-host.
Okay.
You can sidebar anytime you want.
Okay.
Ultimately, I decided to find someone with some acting talent to do Abandoned Hope. And so Michael and I got together. He messaged me, said he wants to do it. We got on the phone. We created we put it in an email, you know, an email documentation kind of what we agreed to. Mm-hmm. So we had some written documentation around the agreement.
I'll interject. I know that because you had talked to him and knew that his first experience wasn't that great, you wanted to make sure that you were responsible on your side.
I wanted to make sure his next experience was excellent.
There you go.
I hope that you found that to be the case. So we created a process whereby I sent him, instead of him just having the book to turn pages, I sent him an actual document. I think it was a Word doc or a PDF that had the text. So he wouldn't have to flip pages. He can just scroll, right? Did that help? Or did you not end up using that?
But I worked out of the book.
Did you really? Okay.
Yeah, I felt like working out of the book.
Well, that's cool. I couldn't hear you flipping pages, so that worked out. I did that because I heard, I had been in my research that I should send a document like that so you could easily scroll it. But
well, it's nice to have both. Just in case I need it, but also working out of the book, I make a lot of notes. So if there's something like I don't understand how to pronounce something, I just don't understand, and you need to Google really quick, I can make little notes. If I get notes from you, like, hey, you screwed this up, or can you fix that? I'll go back through the book and I'll make a little check mark there when I'm doing my final listens.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime there's something that needs to be changed, I'll jot it in the book really quick. So that way when I can line up, I can call back to it quicker. So having the book is helpful.
Interesting.
For me, for my style.
Yeah. Yeah.
So on your end, technically with the technical side of it, what did you need? What equipment do you have and what do you need to be able to record an audiobook?
So I have a vocal booth set up. And it's actually pretty easy to acquire for anyone.
Don't say that. He's trying to make a room.
Does he want one?
Yes.
I do.
You got one to sell?
No. The vocal booth setup I have isn't perfect, but it's fantastic to get you 80 to 90% of the way there. And it's a fraction of the cost of a normal booth. So I don't recommend buying a normal booth.
Like the Whisper Rooms or
the Studio Bricks.
Yeah.
Unless you're making buku bucks as a voice artist of some kind.
Sure.
So where's your vocal, how's your vocal room set up?
So my vocal room is a series of sound dampening blankets. They're people say they're furniture pads. I'm like, yeah, you can get furniture pads. These are professionally produced by sound people, sound dampening blankets, which really do make a huge difference, whereas furniture pads, not so much. And I hang those up and create a booth with it. And I put my mic inside of it and I stand in there and I talk. And it's hooked up to my laptop. And that's about it. That's roughly it. It's a pretty simple setup. It's just a couple of pieces. They just have to be the right pieces.
So would you recommend somebody go down to Best Buy and buy a microphone? Or is there a better grade?
He's smiling at that question.
A better grade of product out there.
That's a broad question. No, there's all these people that say, "Hey, I want to get into this. I'm going to go buy a microphone." And I'm like, "No, buy a $25 microphone, a POS microphone, or use your cell phone and just start practicing.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to dabble in voiceover, and then go take a class." Any class just to see if you like it. Don't buy anything expensive.
Gotcha.
I wouldn't spend more than $50 to $100 on a microphone. And that's just to get practicing recording.
Interesting.
But people will drop $500, $1,000 on voiceover equipment, never touch it, not understand how to really build anything. And then they're selling it on Craigslist a couple months later.
Maybe that's the place to go buy it.
Maybe. Yeah. That's the place to buy your whisper room.
There you go.
All these people that bought whisper rooms and don't use them.
Right.
Well, when people found out I was doing an audiobook, you know, I started getting messages from people, other, you know, some local independent authors. And they're like, yeah, I was thinking about doing that. You know, how are you recording it? I'm like, I'm not. So the voiceover actor has my same name, but it's not me. And that's the intriguing thing to them. So, you know, I would say it was going to be recorded by my friend, Michael DeCamp. And for whatever reason, they missed the part that I'm saying it's not me, you know, and they assume mm-hmm. I'm doing it. I was like, I'm not doing that. I'm actually paying him. And they're like, oh, you're paying him? I'm like, yeah, I'm paying him real money.
You want professional work, you pay for a professional, right?
So, it's like, if you want a quality product, you have to put some quality.
I always say you get what you pay for, right?
Yeah. What kind of a soundboard do you have?
What kind of a soundboard do I have?
Yeah.
I have a very basic Focusrite Scarlett 2i2. It's literally a little box about this big, and it's got two microphone inputs. I probably only need one, but I'm a musician, so I can hook like my piano keyboard up into it or a second microphone into it. And that plugs into my laptop, and that's it.
And you just record it right onto the laptop, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I used to record the podcasts right onto my laptop, and I found there was a little bit of a pop. It's probably because of the quality of my laptop.
Yeah.
Probably. So I'm thinking you must have a decent laptop to be able to handle mm-hmm. the sound as well. So what Michael would do is he would read a section, and we created a Google file, a shared file in a Google Drive. And so he would record the sections, and he would download that, or upload, I guess is more accurate, upload those recordings into the Google Drive. And then as I was able to, I would go through and I would listen to each of those sections, and I would listen to it word for word. And if anything was off or missed or incorrectly pronounced, or there was like weird background noise, we had that a couple of times where there was kind of a pop. And so I would make a note of where it was in the recording, the actual timestamp. And then I would make those notes, and then I would email him back and tell him the things that I heard, and I'd ask for him to correct those. And you know, he didn't get mad when I did that. So,
well, the truth is, he didn't express that he got mad when you did that to him, right? We'll never know.
Well, I was furious, throwing glasses across the room.
Yeah, your wife was like, "What's going on? Why are you so upset?" But what would happen then is he would go through and he would make those adjustments. How did you do that? I mean, you didn't have to re-record that whole section, did you? Or were you able to cut and paste?
No, I was able to punch in pretty well. Those time codes were fantastic. In my setup, if you were to look at my recording document for the book, you have different channels, I want to say. And like when you're recording a band, you're like I'm in a program called Reaper. A lot of people are in Pro Tools. You have a channel for each thing. So if you're recording a band, you have a channel for your guitar, your singer, your drums. Maybe drums is 8 channels for each individual drum, your bass, etc. So that way you can record them all at the same time and mix them on their own little track. Tracks, not channels. And so I made a track for every single chapter. Mm. So that way I could control each thing individually. I could follow my time code a lot easier. So when you gave me those time codes, I knew exactly to jump to 14 minutes and 57 seconds or whatever and find the thing. And I'd also find it in the book and make my little note. And then sometimes it's just a word and I pop in that word. Sometimes it's a phrase and I'll pop in that phrase. But no, I don't have to re-record much. It's actually pretty quick to go through and do a lot of the changes you asked me to do.
I don't know if you noticed this, but early on, I was probably a whole lot more picky yeah, maybe that's the word I'll use. I was a little bit more picky and less comfortable with maybe your take on it. You know, I think later on, there were some things in some of the later chapters where it's like, well, you didn't say it exactly the way I wrote it,
but
it sounded great.
It was good. It's like good.
I don't need to nitpick that. You know, it's like I learned through the process to not be so nitpicky. And I kind of feel like at the beginning I was a little bit more nitpicky. And as the process went along, I mean, if it really changed the, like there were some times where it would change the meaning if I didn't correct it. Right. You know, it's like, I said he was going to go and you said he wasn't going to go or something like that. It changed the whole meaning. Right. And I just made that up, but, those I would have you fix because I didn't want to send the story down the wrong channel. But some of the other things, you know, where it felt a little bit more improvisational. I know you weren't really trying to, but the way it came out wasn't exactly what it was written. And I was like, that's fine. You know, it was only a handful. And it's like, I don't need to change that. This actually sounds really good. Maybe I'd change it. If I went back and fixed the book, I'd change the book to match this. So we just, I ended up being a whole lot more comfortable with that as we got into the process.
And it sounds to me, it's kind of like, Mike, like, somebody has their first child and they're worried about everything and they have the top brand. And then by the third or fourth child, they're like, they're all right. They fell down. That's just a little bit of blood. It's okay. You know?
Well, that hopefully means as time went on, you started to fall in love with my take on it.
Oh yeah. You know, and I really did love how you handled, certain characters. So Earl and Faye, who are the antagonists in the book, you handled their voices perfectly. And I loved what you did with the elves. So for those of you who haven't listened to this story, this is a fantasy thriller. It's really kind of written, probably age wise, it's probably appropriate for about 12 and up. I think, it would be technically considered a middle grade to young adult story, but I've had lots of older adults that absolutely adored it. But it does have some fantasy characters in it. It's a fantasy thriller set in southwestern Indiana, and so there's some elves in it. And Michael, did
I'm
the,
big
voices.
On fantasy, so fantasy is actually what sold me on the book.
Yeah,
if I'm being honest, because when I started reading, I'm like, okay, basic thriller, all right. And then these elves come in, and then they're jumping into this underworld, and I'm like, Oh, now we're in my zone. Okay. This is really fun. So it's combining the kind of a basic kidnapping murder thriller mystery with some fantasy elements.
Yeah.
And then a dash of horror thrown in, which I also love horror.
Yeah.
So that was very helpful in convincing me to take on the project.
So that was probably about the time you sent me the email that said, you know, I'm digging it.
Yeah.
So good.
So you guys had, it was kind of a relay situation, tag team, you know, do this, send it back, check it back and forth.
Yeah.
How long did the process take from when you first started recording to.
When did you start recording? Cause we just submitted it last week to, the publishing company, Find Away Voices is who we use to get it out there. When did you start?
Was it? I want to say around last August or September.
Sounds about right. So it took a while and part of it was delays on my part. You know, I've got a daytime job that's kind of demanding. We both have families. We both have things going on. So he would record and upload the chapters. And then it might take me, you know, if I'm particularly busy, it might take me 2 or 3 weeks to get through those and send them back. So there was a lot of back and forth. And then we also, we also created a Google Drive document that had kept track of hours submitted and payments made so that, you know, I paid them along the way. I didn't wait till the end.
Okay.
We paid after a certain number of hours of completed product. And I would pay, I think it probably made 4 or 5 installments, I think.
Something like that.
But we made, you know, we paid him along the way because, you know, he didn't get paid at all in that first one. And I wanted to make sure he was compensated for for the work he was putting in. And frankly, I told him that, you know, if we do all this work and for whatever reason, technically it doesn't fly, you know, you still deserve to be paid.
Yeah, you're doing the job.
Yeah. So I wanted to make sure that he was my friend, Michael DeCamp. I wanted to make sure he was taken care of. So we tried to do everything above board there. But yeah, it probably took, almost a year. By the time we published
it. Is it out there?
It's been submitted to Findaway Voices. So when you submit an audiobook, you've got a couple of avenues that you can go to. You can go to ACX, which is, it ends up in Audible, and it's owned by Amazon. ACX is a very, it's a great avenue, and a lot of people do it. And if you go that way and you basically say, I only want to be on Audible, then you get paid a little more. But if I went to Findaway Voices, I could still get it on Audible, but I could also get it on a whole lot of other platforms. Mm-hmm. And so it would go to a much wider potential audience. And so I settled on Findaway Voices for the publishing
audience.
Yeah. So ultimately they had a number of specification requirements. So everything from the graphics. So like I created the cover, Michael. So the cover says, Abandoned Hope, a Cutter's Notch novel, book one, written by Michael DeCamp, narrated by Michael DeCamp. And I didn't have that already. So I went to my publisher, my written publisher, and I said, hey, you know, if I paid you a little bit of money, would you create a version of that for me to use on my audiobook? Cause she's not involved in the audiobook. So and so I thought maybe I'd send her a couple hundred bucks. So
did you include initials?
No.
So it looks like you guys both. No, Michael, did you know you wrote a book?
We'll get to this in a second. So we do clarify it in the recordings. My publisher actually agreed to make the cover art for us, no charge. So she didn't charge me anything for that, which I appreciated. But there are specific file sizes and shapes that are required for an audiobook. And then there are specific sound quality details and certain amount of open air at the beginning, a certain amount of open air at the end, and then a certain sound levels that have to be just right. Mm-hmm. And Findaway approved it, but then for it to be on Audible, it has to go to ACX, and ACX has even more criteria. So we haven't heard back from ACX yet, but it's going to be on all the other formats for sure. So it'll be on Spotify pretty soon. It'll be
so an answer to my question.
Apple Books,
it's not out there yet.
It by the time they listen to this, it probably
it should
will
be out there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it should be. So, you know, I got all that done. And finally, last week, I started uploading the files and got them all uploaded. And then I had decided I wanted to give Michael a percentage of the sales. So that was something that I decided. But unfortunately, since we did this outside of the Findaway system, they couldn't split it up. So now I'm going
to
be...
Now you have some administrative work to do.
I have some administrative work to do.
As you sell a million Audible books.
Wouldn't that be nice, Michael, if we sold a million of those?
That would be nice. Then we're definitely doing the next one.
Yeah,
definitely.
And then again, the title of the book that you've recorded?
Abandoned Hope.
Abandoned Hope.
A Cutter's Notch novel, book one.
Okay. Because you have other books, but this is the first novel.
It's the first in the series. So there's three books in the series plus the short stories.
Yep.
I would like to get all those on audiobooks eventually. But
this is a good tester, right? Yeah, it's the start. It's to see, do people have an interest in this particular genre?
Exactly. And, you know, Michael, this was his first actual experience all the way through the process. So I don't think he's decided if he wants to keep going or not either. He's got a whole career outside of recording my books. So, but I think we had fun with it. You know, so far it's been a good experience. So
do you think you want to do more audio work like that?
It honestly depends on how the book performs.
Yeah.
I do enjoy it. It's a lot of work and it's a lot of time. So just from a professional perspective, it does need to perform to a certain degree.
Yep.
For me to continue on, but I would hope that it would.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be great.
I'd love for us to keep going.
You know how I roped you in last time is I sent you a copy of the book, right?
Yeah.
What, are you going to send him the next book?
You want me to send you the next book?
Sure. Get a head start on but my
still,
homework.
There you still, go. Still, show me the money.
Yeah.
But I think that's fair because a lot of people are people who, if you travel, that's listening to an audiobook. A lot of people listen to audiobooks while they're working out. You know, there's different things you can do versus it's a little bit harder to read an audiobook while you're running a marathon or something like that, right?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Michael, and this, I'm just sharing this with you because it's just something that happened. I'm not trying to pressure you. But right before we got to the point where I started uploading the files, probably about a month before, back in early June, I think, I got an email from a narrator who had, I don't know, she'd seen my book somewhere, and she actually sent me about 10 minutes worth of a sample of reading from my book and wanted to narrate Abandoned Hope.
Now that's somebody who's focused on doing the audio work, right? For whatever reason.
You know, it wasn't bad. It was pretty good.
It wasn't you.
But
it was kind of,
I have to be, you know, I have to be honest. It had good sound quality to it.
Awesome.
So, you know, if ultimately, I will get all of them on audiobook some way, shape or form, regardless of how the first one performs, just because I want to, I think we had fun with it and I think it was fun doing a collaboration. So, Michael, won't you tell Nancy how we distinguished who each of us are, for people who might get the book.
So you wrote and I recorded a intro, I guess, mm-hmm. not a prologue, right? An intro clarifying, who we both were, how we met and why this is happening.
Yeah.
Which I think is rather interesting.
It is interesting. And that's, I know the girls and I always joke and tease Mike about being a creeper, you know, oh, you were such a creeper. You're such a dad, you know, whatever, but it is a fun story, you know, to randomly, do that Google search, to meet you, to interact, to actually get to meet because of his day job of being, you know, out close to where you were at and being able to connect and live and have lunch and all of that.
This is a once in a lifetime opportunity for me.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting story.
Yeah, it is an interesting. Someday when you're rich and famous and you're on that late night talk show, you know, I did do something interesting.
Wouldn't it be funny if this thing took off and we were both on a talk show together? That would be hilarious. Right? I'd love that. And so, you know, if you're a talk show host out there and you'd like to have a cool story, we got one for you. I was talking to Findaway Voices. I had a couple of clarification things that, so I emailed their tech support because, you know, you do everything online now. You can't really talk to anybody. So I emailed their tech support and I got an email back and in my email, I mentioned that, the narrator has the same name as me, but it's not the same person. And they emailed back and said, "That's crazy. I've never heard of that." They're like, "That's really cool.
Trendsetters.
And it might help you with some of your marketing." And I'm like, "Well, you know, maybe so. Maybe so." They were kind of intrigued by the fact that we did that. So, you know, if I don't sell a book, I don't sell an audiobook. It was fun doing it. And it was a great fun collaboration.
We went to sell them. People like audiobooks. And this is a good collaboration, a good story. And certainly a quality product. Appreciate your work on it, Michael.
Oh, thank you.
Okay, time for the random question.
All right. Today's random question, I'm pulling it out for you, Michael. If money were no object, what would be the next thing you would buy?
Buy?
Yeah, if money were not an object, you know, you had all the money you needed. What would be the next thing you'd buy?
Gosh, a house. Feel like I owe my wife a house.
You know, when you live in, people should know this, you live in Southern California and housing prices are astronomical, and that's not even an exaggeration. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are astronomical.
Yeah.
What would a 5-bedroom, 3-bath on 1 acre cost in your area?
$2 million minimum.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think.
Move to buy her a house in Indiana. You can go come here and
you could literally buy a house here and then commute back and forth to California and probably save money.
Maybe.
Right. But he'd lose a lot of sleep and wear and tear, right?
Yeah. Okay. So
Mike, what would you buy?
If money were no object, what would I buy? I would buy the most elaborate sound booth I could get. I'm making that up. That's not what I would buy. I would probably buy I'd buy two vacation homes. I'd buy one up in the mountains, probably in Montana or Wyoming, mm-hmm. with a beautiful view. And then I would buy one, that would be for me.
Yep.
And then I would buy a second one on the beach in South Carolina for you.
Thanks.
So there you go.
You're thoughtful.
Maybe I'll buy a third one for Michael.
And there his you go. Wife
so they can have a house. Money were not an object.
You have a house, and you get a house, and you get a house.
Yeah. Look under your chair. There's a house.
All right, Nancy.
Probably top of mind for me right now, I would buy a cottage in the Scottish Highlands.
Ooh.
So we all just want nice places to live.
Yeah. We do.
I think how that works out.
Yeah. Well,
Scottish Highlands. That sounds nice.
Yeah.
If money's not an object,
dreamy. I had a chance to go there last year and did a through hike in the Highlands and fell in love with the country.
You know, if money's not an object, I'm throwing out in a Ford F-150 4x4.
He's wanted a truck forever.
And a Lamborghini.
Oh, goodness.
Michael, thank you for hanging in with us here and joining us on the podcast. Folks out there, if you're interested about making an audiobook, if you are an author and you're like, how do I get this started? Feel free to email me at michael@authormichaeldecamp.com. And I'll be happy to converse with you about the process that we went through and give you any feedback on what your thoughts are. So feel free to email me. And also, go out and buy Abandon Hope.
Listen to it. Give us your thoughts. Tell us what you think of actor Michael DeCamp.
There you go. And if you want to, you can watch him on NCIS, Los Angeles, was it Hawaii? NCIS Hawaii.
Hawaii, yeah.
Yeah. When you can see him get his head smashed in with a bottle. Yeah. So anyway, we appreciate that. Bill White here, thank you very much, Bill, for being our post-production guy. And also, Bill actually did a little final tweaking, checking on the sound. I thought about bringing him in, but I paid him a little bit of money just to recheck the sound just to make sure before I uploaded it. And
it's all good.
So a little bit of money out here, soon. A little bit of money there. But yeah, it'll be out very, very soon. Probably by the time you hear this podcast, it will be available. So go buy it. Michael, thanks. We'll catch you all next time on the next Cutter's Notch podcast.
The Cutter's Notch podcast is available through most podcast listing providers. New episodes drop approximately twice a month. You can email Michael at authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com. Michael DeCamp is the author of two novels, Abandon Hope, Cutter's Notch Book 1, and Nozomi's Battle, Cutter's Notch Book 2. A collection of short stories entitled Cutter's Notch Interludes, and one nonfiction Christian devotional book entitled Loving Out Loud, Learning to Love in a Hate-Filled World. All books can be found on Amazon or ordered from your local bookseller. Please join us again on the next episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast.